Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
Edvest in You, a local New Hampshire nonprofit providing college student loans and student refinancing options. Information online at nhstudentloans.org or by calling 1-855-887-5430.
And from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Used to call them guidance counselors, but schools around the country are now shedding that label as these education professionals find their jobs extending far beyond helping students with courses, college, and careers. While school counselors, as they're now called, still offer that academic guidance, students they see today may need help with other issues: social, emotional, financial, even school safety. Today in The Exchange, as a new academic year begins, we hear from school counselors on what they're preparing for this year. And let's hear from you, too. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange or call in 1-800-892-6477. We have four school counselors with us this morning. Maureen O'Day is here, Director of School Counseling in Londonderry. Maureen, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Also, Maxine Mosley, counselor at McLaughlin Middle School in Manchester. Maxine, welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Also with us, Bill Hewen, Director of School Counseling in the Hudson School District. Bill, thank you for your time.
Also a pleasure.
And also with us, Nicole Burke, Director of School Counseling at Salem High School. And Nicole, thank you for being here as well.
Good morning. Thank you.
Well, I want to start with you, Nicole, and go down the line. How long have you been a school counselor, and what changes have you seen over that time?
I am heading into my 10th year as a school counselor, and I have seen changes mostly in the needs of our students, what we need to know about and what we need to have at our fingertips for resources has certainly changed and diversified in the way that we can help our students become strong young adults and ready for the next step. So really just keeping up with things that are coming into their lives every day.
How about you, Bill?
I'm starting my 26th year as a school counselor. A lot of things have changed in 26 years, notably social media, the impact that has on students and their ability to focus and self-regulate their emotions. Obviously, the opioid crisis. There were drugs back 26 years ago, but I think we're seeing a larger impact on our students and families, and that is definitely taking its toll. So those two big issues right there, I would say, are the biggest I've seen over that time.
Wow. So 10 years, 26 years. How about you, Maxine?
I'm starting my 40th year.
Oh, my goodness.
I know it's been a long road and there's been tremendous changes. I think when I first started, we really were guidance counselors. We were doing the state of the art, what people saw as the services. Now we're doing a tremendous amount of mental health work. And the training that we need is beyond what I ever thought that we would do when we first started. So the needs of students, especially those in Manchester, are significant.
Like Nicole mentioned, needs that you didn't think you would be tending to when you got into this field.
Absolutely not.
So let's go to you, Maureen. How long have you been in the field and what changes have you seen?
This is going to be my 30th year, and I have to agree with what everybody has said. The number one change I would say is more in the arms of mental health, that there are more and more students bringing issues of mental health into the schools, that in the past you didn't talk about it, which is a good thing now that it's being talked about.
Well, it's interesting because all of you have mentioned that. So is it that students today have more mental health challenges, do you think, Maureen, or is it that they're more comfortable sharing them with you?
I think the stigma is going away from mental health being something all-encompassing. I think Judge Broderick has done a great job with the five signs and allowing families to know that mental health can be treated. We can work with it. We just need to work together.
What do you think, Bill?
I agree. Judge Broderick has done a great job around the state really, I guess, providing people permission to share their stories. It's hard to share personal things. It's embarrassing. But he does it. His presentation is done in a way where it's warm and welcoming and it's safe. And more kids and families are feeling comfortable about that. I think there was a sea change years ago where kids started to, they weren't afraid to talk about what they were going through, whether it was medication or the therapies they were in. I would say, you know, at least 15 years ago, I started seeing somewhat of an opening. But then the issues have changed, got more severe, and it kind of went away again. But then more recently, it's okay. It's okay to talk about it. It's not okay to use it as an excuse, and most people do not. But people want help. People want to know that there's someone out there that will help them. And the only way to do that is to speak up and so ask and let people know what's going on.
So, Nicole, if a student comes to you and says, look, I'm struggling with anxiety, it's affecting my schoolwork, it's affecting my ability to be here, I mean, what do you do for that person?
We really break it down and say, okay, I think I know what anxiety is like, but tell me what it's like from your shoes. What's happening for you? What are you experiencing daily? What are some things that you know are triggers for you? And we talk about, you know, as much as they can, and they do a great job sharing with you when they have that trusted relationship with you, what it is that they think they need and what it is you as a school can provide and how you can come up with a plan that works for that student so that they can still stay on track and meet their goals that they have. Because just because they have anxiety or depression or, you know, a loss in their family doesn't mean that the train needs to stop and they need to start over. You know, it's our work to kind of brainstorm, come together and figure out, you know, what does this student need? And it might be different than their best friend sitting next to them in math class and also has anxiety. It's going to be different for every student. And we just do our best to kind of work with each kid and each family on figuring out what's best for them.
Well, and all of you talking about the many needs that your students have and the complicated issues that they're bringing into your offices. So here's a basic question. I'll start with you, Maxine. How many students does each counselor at your school have? What's your ratio?
Unfortunately, in Manchester, that ratio is much higher than most places because we've had a cut in staff. So we had 10% cut in staff. That included our guidance department, K through 12. So at my school and all the middle schools in Manchester, we used to have 3 full-time counselors, one for each grade, and we moved with those students for 3 years.
So you get to know them. That's great.
Get to know them, really get to have that trusting, intentional conversations and relationships. We're down to 2.5. So we split a counselor with another middle school. So it makes it very difficult because for half a day, every day, the 2 counselors that are full-time cover the entire school. And one of the things we know about middle school kids is they're extremely needy. They have rapid, rapid growth spurts mentally, emotionally, and physically. And a lot of kids are coming to school with tremendous trauma. Manchester is also a refugee center, so we have a lot of kids coming in with trauma that we haven't even been able to start to understand yet. From either refugee camps or the countries that they're coming from that they've fled in fear.
So one counselor per, can you say?
I usually run about 350 kids.
Wow.
And for middle school, that's very high.
Yeah. How about you, Maureen?
Well, we're fortunate in the state of New Hampshire. We are on the low end of student counselor ratio across the country. I would say elementary school counselors, the maximum is 500 to one counselor.
So that sounds like
it's
a lot.
It is still very, very high. We are fortunate that our minimum standards has this information that school counselors at the elementary level, it's recommended not to go above 500. Would love to see that back at 250. Marianne Graffair, when she was at the State Department, did a great job trying to advocate. At the high school level, I'm fortunate with 6 counselors that the highest is just around 250.
That still sounds like a lot to me, given all the expectations around not just traditional roles of quote-unquote guidance counselors, and Bill's giving me a look there, but also, you know, should I choose a career? Should I go to community college? You know, should I go to a 4-year school? But the social, emotional, financial baggage that kids bring in that hurts their ability sometimes to focus academically, 1 to 250 sounds enormous to me.
It really can be, depending upon the makeup of the students, because you're going to be shortchanging another student time-wise. because we our goal is to see every single student. And sometimes one student may be in your office for days on end, which is going to take away your time.
Which is great because maybe you're helping that person, but then who are the 15 other people who walk by your office and say, oh, she's busy right now. So, Bill, I'd love your thoughts on this too, this ratio issue and what it means you can and can't do.
Well, pardon me, I'm going to use the G word. So I think if you're going to have a guidance counselor, 1 to 300 is probably not bad because that role, your career planning or working on schedules, and that can be pretty cut and dry. When you start looking at what school counselors are doing now, and I think you described it lovely in regards to the social-emotional pieces and the other therapy-type things, even though we're not therapists, that school counselors are now being asked to do, you need to start really looking at smaller caseloads because you're spending more intense time on really like sensitive issues that you just can't be like, okay, your 15 minutes is up, your crisis must be over. Next, please. So I think that, and Maureen and I have done extensive work working with Marianne when she was with the Department of Ed, working on standards and numbers and the roles of a school counselor. And we were, you know, pat ourselves on the back. We went and worked hard to advocate to get our certifications now do say school counselors, because the Department of Ed really was attentive to really defining what we do.
So do you guys have school psychologists too, or are you kind of the school psychologist?
Well, it varies in each district what the role of a school psychologist is. I know I can speak for Hudson, where the majority of the role of our school psychologists are doing special ed testing. They're not necessarily meeting and doing therapy or doing any kind of counseling per se. The majority, and people around here can correct me if I'm wrong, a majority of them are doing it's special ed testing. We also have two social workers that are doing some interventions, more like counseling. But our school psychologists, at least in Hudson, are doing majority of special ed testing.
Go ahead, Nicole.
Yeah, I would say we too also have school psychologists in our school district as well, and they are very involved with the special education department. And as far as the ratio goes, I think in our school district, we're very fortunate with the caseload sizes that we have, but and ours are similar to what Maureen mentioned about Londonderry, with about 250 being the highest, and some variety in between. We have a couple of our high school counselors work specifically with the freshmen, so they split just the freshman class, and then there's the grades 10 through 12 counselors as well. So folks' responsibilities differ a little bit in that way, but we really do come together and work as a team to try and support the whole student body as best we can, and provide our school with resources and supports that they can direct their students to when they're having a tough time in class, too.
You know, you're the with 10 years under your belt, Nicole, you're the one with the least amount of experience, which is amazing. 26 years and 30 years and 40 years. We've done shows on teacher burnout. We've done shows on doctor burnout. What do you think, Nicole? How common is school counselor burnout?
I think it really... it comes down to knowing how to take care of yourself and rely on those who can support you. I think I'm sitting around the table with some of my biggest supporters here in the field. And you have to know when it's okay to reach out for help. And we've all been there. You know, we've seen something like that. If we haven't come across that particular scenario, we'll work together and do what we can to support each other and make sure that those who are in it are able to stay for the long haul, like some of these folks who've been around for quite a while.
Well, Maxine, that's you. You've got 40 years, you told us. What about school counselor burnout?
I tend to see fewer school counselors leave the field than I do classroom teachers or specialists. I think that the issue for us in our position is that we hold a lot of information. We hold horrific stories over our careers. And for us, we can't share kids' names. We really, really work on that confidentiality issue. But we can share stories. And all of us have stories that are probably very parallel about the students who come to us with real lifelong interferences and trauma.
Like what?
I had a student several years ago that was designated by the Attorney General's office as the worst case of child pornography in the state of New Hampshire, where this particular child was prostituted by a parent in their home, and videos were taken that went worldwide, and it was just a horrific, long situation for this young person. And as a school counselor, my job was to support this person in the school setting and to work with the outside agencies and support to make sure that I was on track. Because that's one of the things that we do is we really work collaboratively with community resources because we don't want to duplicate services. We all want to support each other for the best for the child. And in many cases, we're doing support for families. So that's one of thousands of stories over my career. Recently, most of my stories have to do with kids coming from homes that have somebody in the opioid addiction mode. I have more and more students that are not living with their natural biological parents. They're living with grandparents, which is putting a fiscal and emotional burden on those folks who are using their savings to now support their grandchildren. I have more kids in foster care and in placements than I've ever seen over my entire career as a result of the opioid crisis.
Well, I want to let our listeners know that when you said you see more and more kids not living with their natural parents because of the opioid crisis, everybody around the table nodded. So I will get your thoughts on that as well and hear from you. I also want to invite our listeners to join us today as we get ready to go back to school. We've got a school counselor roundtable. As the new academic year begins, we're finding out what some of the biggest issues are facing students as they head back to school. Our school counselors are telling us about academics, emotional help, and how they try to help children succeed in school, some of the issues from home that kids bring to them. We'd love your questions and comments, especially if you have experience with school counselors. If you were one yourself or you have an experience with your own child, 1-800-892-6477 is our number. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. You can respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Again, 1-800-892-6477. So, Maureen, to you first, when a child's trouble is home life, and Maxine mentioned the opioid crisis, how much power do you have to deal with that, Maureen, to help them with that?
At times it feels like you're helpless in certain cases. I can go back to a student that in a health class had written that she had been sexually abused, and in following the guidelines, we're mandated reporters, and our job is to report, not to determine guilt or innocence, just to do the reporting. And upon the reporting, the parent was taken from the house. And he hung himself.
Yikes.
And so, you kind of live with that. Like, here's a student that reported sexual abuse. I reported. Now a parent is no longer with us. I received Father's Day cards for the next 3 years.
As a way of taunting you?
Yes. So you kind of with situations like that, you just feel so helpless that did I do the right thing? And I absolutely know I did the right thing. If this situation were to happen again, I'm a mandated reporter. The student was asking for help. We provided what help we could working within the system. Right now, we're fortunate that the mental health crisis and the opioid crisis are really in the forefront in New Hampshire. And so hopefully there'll be more and more supports. The Office of Student Wellness at the Department of Education is really reaching out to schools to try and help us with resources that are available as well as many community resources.
Well, and there are federal dollars on their way to help New Hampshire with the opioid crisis as well. So I'm guessing some of that might trickle down to schools. We'll talk about that with you, Bill, and you, Nicole, as well after a short break. And we'll start hearing from our listeners. So your stories, questions, comments for these school counselors are welcome. 1-800-892-6477. Keep it right here.
New New Hampshire Public Radio listeners are educated, engaged, and digitally savvy. As an NHPR underwriter, your business can reach this digital audience through our many podcasts, our e-newsletters, or at our award-winning news site, nhpr.org. Learn how you can reach the best and brightest online community in New Hampshire and beyond by visiting the business support page at nhpr.org/underwrite.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, it's back to school season, and we're sitting down with a group of school counselors, hearing what they're getting ready for in this new academic year. And let's hear from you. If you have a story to share about a counselor or you're one yourself, let's get your thoughts about the role these education professionals are playing. And as we're hearing, it is about a lot more these days than just helping students choose courses and decide their career or college path. Again, our email is exchange@nhpr.org, exchange@nhpr.org, or call in 1-800-892-6477. Our counselors are Nicole Burke with Salem High School, also Bill Hewen, Director of Counseling in the Hudson District, Maxine Mosley, Counselor at McLaughlin Middle School in Manchester, and Maureen O'Day, Director of Counseling in Londonderry. And all of you, just before the break, Maureen was telling us about the opioid crisis, how it's affected her schools, some of the trauma that her kids see. She told us a very moving story about reporting a sexual abuse and the fallout from that. But when one of you mentioned the opioid crisis, all of you nodded your heads. So, Nicole, to you next, how has the opioid crisis been felt among the students that you are working with?
Yeah, I think as a school counselor at the high school level, we are really focused in trying to help students become their best young adult self and having the tools and resources and perseverance to get through obstacles, to work through challenges that may come up at home, while also doing our best within the school to make school the safest and most comfortable and high priority while a student is there. You know, every student comes in with their own experiences and own lives outside of the school. And I know just before the break, we were talking about how sometimes when a student brings issues to you, you kind of feel hopeless because you can only do so much as a school counselor. You know, we can't fix or change or go back in time and change a student's home experiences. And that plays so much of a role on who they are as a teenager. So really what we try to do is be aware of as many resources that are out there and places we can help direct families to or direct the teenagers themselves to so that they can start to access their own supports with community mental health organizations. I know we have a great relationship with a few of the organizations in our community, and we do a great job of connecting with them and letting them know when a student needs help right away and immediately, and also doing the best that we can to make sure that when a student steps foot in our building that they're able to get through a full day, focus on their academics as best they can.
That must be so hard, though. Life. How do you write your social studies report when there's drug use in your home if your parent overdosed the night before? I mean, my goodness.
Right, right. And we're fortunate in that we have some great understanding teachers. Teachers understand that the students sitting in front of them are a whole human, and they have experiences, and you know they'll hold students accountable, and they'll help, they'll help them get their education while also understanding too that they come with some other issues too.
Go ahead, Bill.
Well, I think it's all that. I think it's what we used to do a lot of is reach out to the community for resources, and more now the schools are providing those resources in the buildings. We partner with Greater Nashua Mental Health to connect parents and kids. We have people coming into the buildings. A few years ago, I don't know if it was a risk or not, but I welcomed in organizations who come to the building to meet with kids because they couldn't get to the offices. So I would, and it, there's a lot of legal issues with that, and not with the schools per se, but with the organizations. Like, they can't do certain types of therapy on school grounds to do it. So we're still trying to work through that. We had the name's escaping me now. Don't think of the name. They had counselors come in to help specifically with groups and drug issues. And these guys will know the name of it in a second.
It'll That's come okay, to me. But what's the content
so
of it?
So the issue is we lost that at the school. We had a person just in the building doing drug intervention and smoking cessation programs and those type of things. Student assistant programs. Thank you. those were great. Those were specific programs that were in the schools to work with students to help them with either themselves or close relatives who have had a drug and opioid problem. It dealt with dating violence. It dealt with smoking cessation, those type of things. Those were grant-funded positions in a lot of school districts, and the grants dried up. So those programs in the schools went away. So I think a lot of the stuff we have used to go out to the community. We're looking to do now in the buildings. We have tons of professional development that are offered to school counselors, but there's a lot. Like, there's only so much time in the day, and as Nicole was saying, we can't go back in time, nor can we take the kids home with us. And someone asked me what's the worst part about my job, and I said 2:10 every day, because that's when the school's over and the kids leave and they go home. And majority of the kids go to homes, loving parents and great resources, but there's those out there that are going home to an empty house or to a house that's not healthy. And that hurts us, and hopelessness sinks in.
Go ahead, Maxine, and then Maureen, and then we'll go to our listeners.
Yeah, I just wanted to quickly say that we do a lot of talking here about assisting students to be able to get assistance on their own. But that is not true with the elementary students. Elementary counselors have a much tougher road, I think, than the secondary counselors, in that many times they're the only counselor in a building. They don't have a team to work with. They're working with young people who haven't quite developed their language skills or labels for their emotions or the ability to reach out. I think the other thing in talking about the student assistance programs, Manchester's very fortunate. That's one of the things that we have protected. We have a student assistance counselor in each of our middle and each of our high schools. They're very busy people. They certainly support school counselors in the work that we do, but the roles are very, very different. We do a real large expansion of services. Student assistance program coordinators and counselors are much more focused, as Bill said, on drug, alcohol, and trauma.
Wow. Go ahead, Maureen.
I also wanted to bring up the often forgotten aspect of students coming to school with food insecurities. And so whether it's 68 hours of hunger, or looking across at school districts where students have large lunch bills that the families aren't able to pay. As a school counselor, when a student comes to you, you know they're hungry. You're trying to work with the family, with food service, to make sure that not only are they okay during school, but as Bill said, at 2:10, when they're going home, you want to make sure that the family's okay.
Well, I remember when I was in school, which was a million years ago, nobody had school breakfast. Now that seems pretty common, right, Maureen?
It is. And what's also really common is food pantries within schools.
Yes.
Whether it's at elementary schools, middle schools, high schools. One school district, I think it was in New Jersey, actually has a laundromat so that students can clean their clothes.
Wow.
And so the schools really are taking on a lot more than they have in the past, but it's also trying to help just basic needs of students.
I want to go to our listeners. Lots of people writing in with their questions. So our email is exchange@nhpr.org. And again, if you want to ask a question or comment or just share your experiences with school counselors in your community, you can send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. So Kate sent us an email. She says, I'm a psychologist in Dover. She says, what are your thoughts on the money being spent to harden schools? Kate says, I'm concerned that the money being spent to harden schools will have the unintended consequences of sending the message to students and parents that the world is unsafe, when in fact school shootings are tragic, rare events. New Hampshire has relatively low rates of gun violence, with the exception of self-inflicted suicide. Kate says, I'd rather see the money spent to support guidance counselors and mental health support for students who are suffering and might be at risk for violent behaviors. Kate, thank you so much, because I did want to raise this issue with you. Every single time there's one of these terrible school shootings, everybody says we need to watch out for each other in school. Adults in school need to watch out for, problem behaviors. We need to create a climate of schools where everybody's looking out for each other. What do you think? Maybe you first, Bill, Kate's point about why are we spending money hardening schools when she feels we should be spending money on guidance counselors and so forth. I'm sorry, I said guidance counselors, school counselors.
That's all right. I think a lot of the schools, the hardening is an interesting term. I think a lot of it is somewhat of a mandate. The state wants the schools to be safe. The school they want, and the parents want to know they're sending their children to a building that is safe. We're blessed in a lot of our schools across the state to have resource officers as part of our faculty. And their role is not necessarily security. They're there as a resource. But I think it's a nice feeling for parents when they're dropping their children off. And I know it when I work down with my elementary counselors, a resource officer down there, it provides a lot of that security, that feeling where the kids who get off the bus, they know they're going to be safe. And if they're walking in and they're fed and they're feeling safe, then they're ready to learn. The money piece, once again, we're fortunate. There's a lot of grant money out there. I know that in Hudson, we're putting cameras in the middle school and we're putting bulletproof film over the glass of certain windows to make sure that that we're going to be safe. And God hopes, I hope with God that nothing does happen. But we can't hope. Hope's not a good strategy. We have to be prepared. And I think there's also a lot of grant money out there and a lot of good, redistributing of funds through the Office of Wellness, who's a great supporter of school counselors, to provide us with training. Over the last couple of years, we had Cassie Yackley come in and work with us with social emotional learning, and Lynn Lyons with anxiety. So I think there's a lot of resources out there you could take advantage of and do both, actually.
Is it easier, Maxine, for schools to ask the school board for money to harden the glass or put in more cameras than it is to say, you know, we could really use a couple more school counselors to keep an eye on these kids?
That absolutely has been a struggle. I think that school security includes a good student services staff. I think that in this day and age of an opioid crisis, a lot of crime goes with that. I think that there's nothing more important than keeping our schools safe. I don't agree with the term we're hardening our schools. I think that's a pretty misrepresentation.
It was Katie's term.
Respectfully saying to Katie. But I do think we need more counselors. We need a lot of everything. I mean, the funding sources in New Hampshire really prohibit us from doing some of the depth of the work that we'd like to do. But I do think that school security is a critical thing for all of us.
So, Nicole, and maybe you too, Maureen. Nicole, what's your role as a school counselor in creating a more secure school environment? Again, after an incident, everybody turns to staff people like you to say, let's create a more supportive, communicative environment.
Sure. So I think
it's a big responsibility.
It is. And luckily, we work in teams. No one ever handles a big project or a big planning event alone. We have very clear roles and very expected, very prescribed plans in place for if something should happen, this is how we would react. But really, I think the best thing to do is be as proactive with creating a positive school culture and climate where people feel connected and belong and care for one another. Students, staff, everyone in between, you know, looks over each other and says, you look all right. You don't look so good today. You okay? Everything all right? Or, you know, they're not opening doors for strangers to come into the building or people they don't recognize. You know, we're following a very particular plan in place for how people enter our building so that, you know, we have a very large school. We don't want anyone being able to enter any of the doors that are around the building. We want to do what we can to protect one another. And we really work hard to try and make sure that we're as proactive with positive relationship building and environment that we can be.
Well, and people often say it's all about relationships and students having a trusted adult that they can go to if they themselves are struggling or if they're afraid that, you know, their person in math class is, you know, acting like they might carry out a violent act. But you guys all talked earlier in the show about your ratios, which to my ears sound huge. I mean, 1 to 300, 1 to 250. So how do you, Nicole, really know who's having thoughts that might be inappropriate about taking action in their school when you are supposed to keep your eye on 250 kids, including, you know, many who may say, hey, Nicole, you know, I'm not sure whether I should go to community college or a four-year. Help me out. I mean, you got that on your plate, too. Let's not forget.
Right, right. There's certainly we wear many hats in the school counseling office, but like I said before, the staff in our building is a team. We are all there for all the students. It's not just the school counselor's role to have conversations with students. There are teachers, administrators, case managers, administrative assistants. Every adult in the building is having conversations with students every day and making it hopefully a positive experience for students. So, you know, it's important for school counselors to remember that they're not alone and they aren't the only one who's interacting with students every day, and that teachers play a very strong role because they, for the most part, see the students at least 90, if not 180 days every year. So
they might come to you and say, Nicole, I'm worried about this teacher, this student. Yeah. What do you think, Maureen?
The issue of tightening up schools, I think history is telling us we have to. There are only 5 states that have not had a school shooting where 5 or more students were injured: Hawaii, North Dakota, Wyoming, West Virginia, and New Hampshire. And it's not that any of those 5 states are doing anything fantastic that is stopping it. It's just that we've been lucky. And so we're learning from the past what needs to happen. And having access to the SROs, the school resource officers, each district has their own emergency preparedness plan. And making sure that everybody understands what the plan is. Part of the reason I think we have so many anxious students, anxiety is the fear of what might happen. And when you're seeing on the news a new shooting or something, more and more students, they're kind of becoming desensitized to it and not realizing that it can happen anywhere at any time. And we just need to make sure that everybody on the team is doing what they can within schools to keep students safe.
Well, Katie, really appreciate the email. And here's another one from Susie. As a recently retired middle school teacher, I have grave concerns about the levels of stress that I saw in our students over the last 8-10 years. Can you please comment on the rise in numbers of students who are on anxiety, bipolar, depression medications, and the current pressures facing students? What can parents do to relieve those pressures? And what can guidance counselors, her word, not mine, do to educate parents about being part of the solution rather than the problem? Wow, Susie, lots of good thoughts there. What do you think, Maxine?
There has been an incredible increase in diagnoses of mental health illness at a much younger age. We're seeing the diagnoses level go up rapidly at the elementary level, young children being diagnosed with adult disorders and being put on adult-level medication.
You sound concerned about that.
I'm extremely concerned. We're talking about, you know, young people whose bodies and brains are still forming and putting a lot of chemicals in their body when that may not be overall the best solution. I think what parents can do is, my number one thing is they need to watch their kids use the social media. A lot of things that are happening that are distressing students are not what's happening necessarily in their academic life. It's happening in their social life. In middle school, as much as we would all like to believe that it's all about learning academics, it's a social pecking order. And social media has certainly complicated how kids feel about themselves, how they communicate or poorly communicate with other people and treat other people. And that's going down to 5th grade, 4th grade, 3rd grade. Kids have so much electronic access, it needs to be monitored very, very closely. That's, to me, the best thing that parents can do. The other problem is lots of families have secrets. It takes us sometimes years to find out what's really happening with a child. We're there to listen. We're there to be supportive. We're not there to solve all problems, but we are there to just try to get a feel for what the kid needs. I think that stress has been underrated. And people feel that kids don't have stress. Kids have stress as early as preschool. A lot of parenticized kids, a lot of kids dealing with a lot of home issues. So it's a big issue for parents to be aware.
All right. I think I want a couple other people to follow up on that point, Susie, that you made. So thank you very much. We'll take more of your emails after a short break, exchange@nhpr.org, or you can give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Coming up, we'll also talk about some of the academic changes that our school counselors are dealing with and how they're helping kids navigate those. All that's coming up. Stay with us. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on our show, we conclude our special summer series, Going Local, with the Merrimack Valley region. So if you live in this area, send us your thoughts. What's it like to live in the Merrimack Valley region? What do you love? What don't you love? Let us know. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. We really want to hear from you as we conclude our Going Local series. This hour, four New Hampshire school counselors are with us, looking ahead to a new academic year. We're hearing about the many, many, many issues that students bring into their offices. Let's hear from you, too, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. A bunch more emails, all of you. But, Bill, I did want you to pick up on what Maxine said in response to an emailer talking about anxiety, stress. And Maxine seemed to be saying fueled in part by social media. And I wonder what you think.
I absolutely agree. Maxine hit it right on the head there. And we always look at, and school counselors and all educators are always going through professional development. And as the changing landscape that we live in, there's always more to learn. So we always try to read and go to professional development opportunities and work with colleges. And I know we're going to get to academics later, so it's kind of a segue for you. I just finished, and Maureen and I have been talking about a book called iGen, little I, capital G-E-N, written by Jean Twenge. And it talks about exactly everything Maxine was referencing in regard to social media. The overall arching message of the book is that kids are less risk-taking. Drug use
less
is down.
Risk-taking.
Absolutely.
Even though you can see all these sort of pranks and stunts on Instagram and you might be inspired to do it yourself.
She did a nationwide study, and it came down to they're not going out as much. Like back in my day, you know, we'd go cruise Elm Street in Manchester. Kids aren't doing that much anymore. They're not going to the parties anymore. They're in their homes on computers. So they're not out doing risk-taking activities like we did back, you know, whatever you wanted, you know, the delinquency type things, which were harmless back then for kids. They're at home on their computers playing games, doing social media, and you're seeing a rise in depression and antisocial behavior, the inability to have a conversation when you look somebody in the eye because you're in front of a computer screen or you're talking without a person there. So when it comes to the point where you have to go to school and talk to somebody and present in front of class, that's causing more anxiety with students.
Because they're not used to doing it.
Right.
They're not used to getting into an argument with their friends face-to-face. They do it online.
Right. And look around. People, younger kids now, I see it all the time when I go out. They're having a temper tantrum or they're having a hard time. And the first thing they do, they hand them a cell phone or an iPhone or an iPad. And it's the electronic pacifier. And that's become more common. But then it kind of creates this issue where then that's what they need to calm themselves down. They get to social media and it's a snowballing effect and that book, Jean Twenge's book, covers it's a lot of data. So if you like data, you'll love the book. But the data connects to it, you know, what's going on with society, with psychology and the development of the brain and how that's happening. And it's amazing. It's a great book.
So Nicole, how does that characteristic of iGen that Bill told us about, how does that affect your work as a school counselor?
One of the things that I think it connects most directly to is helping students learn how to communicate well and effectively and make their point and be able to have a respectful disagreement with someone. You don't always have to be on the same side as someone in a disagreement, but you need to be able to respect and accept the way someone feels or thinks, and then productively move on and do so oftentimes in a face-to-face manner and in the workplace or in class or wherever it is that you're going to have those disagreements and be able to do so without firing off things that you don't really mean or that aren't being interpreted the way that you meant them to be from a keyboard or a cell phone. You know, we really try to encourage students to step away from that as much as we can so that they can develop real-world social skills that'll come into play later on.
Well, it's not just kids who have,
sure,
you know, that problem. It's
right.
Adults as well.
Right.
Another email. Here's one from Jane who says, I work in a New Hampshire high school and find that the school counselor's time is monopolized by student scheduling. Many of the students I talk to say the only conversation they ever have with their counselor is about what classes they will take next year. I also still find counselors are pushing students who are not prepared to traditional four-year colleges. Jane says, with student debt and extremely low graduation rates at colleges, what are your guests doing around realistic career counseling? Jane, so glad you emailed. And maybe I'll turn to you first, Maureen, but anybody jump in. This is a part of your job that I would not want. Because how do you counsel a young person, still unformed, really, that, you know, this might be the right path for you or that might be the right path for you?
I have to say I am very, very fortunate in the Londonderry School District. We use the assessment suite from the College Board. And so our 8th and 9th graders will take the PSAT 8-9, and then sophomores and juniors will take the PSAT and MSQT in 10th grade and 11th grade. The state assessment has turned to the SAT. So from there, we gain a lot of data about the students academically, how it compares to New Hampshire standards, and where they actually fall in terms of benchmarks for college and career readiness. We also are able to utilize, we developed a futures lab, and it was the brainchild of actually two teachers, Suzanne Johnson and Donna Chisholm, and they felt that students needed additional help like that, like Jane had talked about, where it's help, giving more help to school counselors. And through the Futures Lab, we have goals that students have to meet for college and career readiness, doing a personality assessment, personality profile, doing a career interest profile. We take them on a tour. We are in the Manchester School of Technology catchment, so we take them over there to tour the career and technical courses. But the goal with all students in Londonderry is to help them determine what's the right career.
So it's more than just SATs and PSATs.
Absolutely.
Because I would hate
That's
for kids
the
to
data.
Be shuttled just based
right.
on that test.
That's the you want to just take a look at the data. For the students that are going to be college bound, we want to make sure that they're hitting the benchmarks, that it's not going to be a 6-year graduation rate. The price of college and the amount of student debt is out of control. So if we can give that information to students and parents that if this is your goal, this is where we really need to work on. For students, we do career breakfasts. And in the spring, Nicole, Bill, and I work together in doing career fairs for students that may want to take us, may be looking for a summer job, or for students that are looking for possible careers.
So it's a lot broader than just, here's
Absolutely.
How you did on the SAT, Susie, you know, so you're going to a 4-year school and Johnny,
Absolutely.
You didn't do so well, so, you know.
Absolutely. And a lot of student choice. You might have a student, you know, the number one student in your graduating class, but they're really focused on being a cosmetologist. Nothing wrong with that. Then this is the avenue for you.
What do you think about this, Bill? I love this question.
It's a great question.
How do you decide how to guide kids? Because, you know, this is the more traditional role of guidance counselor. And many adults have stories about my guidance counselor told me I'd never make it in college, or my guidance counselor told me I absolutely had to go to college and I flunked out my freshman year. I wasn't ready. I mean, it's really very tricky.
Well, I think as a school counselor, you can't work in those absolutes where you label people and say you have to do this or don't have to or you shouldn't do. It's individual. And that's where going back to the ratios you talked about, the more time we have to spend with conversations and not be like a fast food drive through
yeah.
with the kids, I think we can have those conversations. And I think how early is too early? And I'm sure Maxine will have comments with this, but I know with my counselors in the Hudson School District who do a great job and the district's very supportive in talking career exploration in elementary level. If you're talking for the first time about a career plan while you're in high school, it's almost too late because what you do in the middle school is huge. And the middle schools are the pivotal time for kids to start getting a direction. And if we're waiting to get to high school, it's too late. And yeah, and the scheduling issue, yeah, school counselors do scheduling, but it's cyclical. I'm telling you right now, not being in the office and working on schedules when we start next Tuesday, it's a little stressful.
And I also want to let people know that kudos to our producer, Christina Phillips, because it was really hard to find guidance counselors to come in this time of year.
Yeah.
Understandably, they were all like, we're so busy. Are you kidding me? This time of year? So I appreciate you guys.
So it's cyclical. Probably the first week of school is probably scheduling and you won't leave our office and we'll probably eat at our desks and those type of things. But once that's set and the kids are in the classes where they're learning and getting instruction from all our great teachers, then we can turn to the other issues of the career planning. We have nights for all different people, and we have college fairs, and we have not college fairs. And so it's ebbs and flows. And I think going back to another issue, that's what keeps us young. I mean, in this 26 years, every year is the same thing, but it's different.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make sense, that statement, but it's the same thing, but it's different. And it's exciting.
I have noticed, Maxine, with my own kids, more emphasis in the middle schools now on, you know, not this is what you should do and this is what you should do, but let's explore college. Let's explore the community colleges. Let's explore careers. Lots of kids are encouraged to take gap years now. Sometimes I almost feel like, you know, so many of them are encouraged to take gap years that not enough of them are going to college. So I just wonder what you think about it dribbling down to the middle school, this college and career readiness idea, and how effective that is.
Well, I think Bill's correct. I was also an elementary counselor for a long time, and we do a lot of pathway exploration, even in the elementary level. It's kids need to have a connection to the future, and a lot of our kids don't. And that connection is, what are you going to do as an adult? What things interest you? What kind of jobs do you know about? Introducing them to the jobs that are up and coming. We still don't know what all the jobs are going to be in 10 years.
No.
We do know that technology will play a major part, and that the service area is a major component of need in this country. But the reality is, the younger you can get kids thinking about themselves beyond the moment and making some kind of plans or having thoughts about the future, you have more of an opportunity to help them be successful adults.
I like the way you put pathway. Not are you this, are you this, are you this, but here are some of the different pathways that you can travel along. All right. Well, thank you again for that email. You can send us an email as well, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Or you can give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Here's an email from Adrian who says, I really appreciate this forum and Voice for School Counselors. I was a school counselor in Northern New Hampshire for 8 years, and I'm just about to start a counselor education and supervision PhD program. Adrian says, part of my research focus involves school counselor preparedness for supporting the evolving mental health and trauma-related issues you've been discussing. Here's her question for all of you. Adrian says, do you feel like your master's programs prepared you for the current roles? If not, what more is needed? In other words, what does the world of higher education need to plan for in training new school counselors? Adrian, this is a great question. And Nicole, I'm going to start with you since you've been in the field just 10 years, which is a good long time, but less than everybody else at the table.
I often joke with other counselors or administrators or teachers and say, well, yeah, this is all the stuff they taught you in grad school, right?
But not
so much. You know, I think for me, coming out of grad school, I had an excellent internship experience when I was in graduate school for a master's of education in counseling, and that truly helped mold who I was as a counselor and helped me understand the inner workings of working in a high school, because we spent a lot of time in our graduate program learning about counseling techniques and theories and case studies and things like that. But it really was actually being in a caring, supportive educational setting for my internship that helped me truly understand that I was ready for that role. And I think one of the biggest differences, too, that folks might not realize is that school counselors don't necessarily come out with a mental health counseling background. So we, as a school counselor, can't really provide that therapy that some students might need. So we might meet very often with a particular set of students, but we aren't technically able to or ethically able to provide that mental health counseling an hour a week or every other week or whatever that might be that the student needs. And so really making sure that we understand the resources in the community that we're working with to make sure that we help families and students get what they need outside of our building.
And that's tough because there are not that many therapists with, you know, after school hours in their schedules who are especially equipped to deal with young people. It's
right.
Not like the state is crawling with mental health therapists who can see kids.
And certainly they're experiencing the same kind of burnout that we talked about earlier, right? They are seeing the same things we are in their offices. So we're fortunate that we have some good relationships with our community therapists where we will have some who do come in and meet with students during the school day. But at the same time, that's only appropriate for certain students who can do their therapy session and then go off and take a social studies exam.
Yeah.
You know, we want to be very careful that we're not opening too much in the middle of a school day and then expecting a 14 or 15-year-old to just carry on with the rest of their day.
Right, because they may be still really processing
sure.
that conversation with the therapist. What do you think, Maureen? It's a great question, Adrian asks. You know, basically, how much did your education prepare you for all the stuff that you've been telling us about today?
Not at all.
Not at all. There you go, Adrian.
I'm probably a little different in terms of this. I was actually working in a college and never really thought I would be a school counselor, but I needed a degree. And I may have taken the classes out of order and completed the degree in a year. My best education was baptism by fire. And I'd have to say, when Nicole started out, I think I threw her into some pretty good fires where it baptized her as well. And I think that's the way you really learn. The change in generations also requires us to change. And the textbook isn't going to help you with that. You know, when you have a suicidal student sitting in front of you, you can't flip open the book and say, okay, this is what I need to do. Every student's going to be different. It's really looking at the situations and then reevaluating them. After it's completed, go back and see what was great, what wasn't great, how can we improve? And I think that's one of the areas that we work together, too.
So, Maxine, you've been in this business for 40 years, you told us. What would you say to a young person listening today thinking, well, I was thinking about going into school counseling, but I'm not quite sure?
School counseling is a wonderful field. It's rewarding. It's a lifelong way to assist children and young people. I think it's about constantly knowing that you're a lifelong learner and training, and doing some more training. You just don't know everything, and the more that you learn, the more confident you can be.
Well, and as Bill said, you're learning all the time, and every year it's the same, but every year it's really different. So, well, good luck this school year. I really appreciate you all taking time out of your preparations to come in and talk to us today, and thank you so much for being here, all of you. Really appreciate
thank
you.
Thank you.
And a reminder that tomorrow on The Exchange, we are wrapping up our Going Local series with the Merrimack Valley region. So if you live in the Merrimack Valley region, we'd love to hear from you. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. And this is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.